From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in another conversation in our series with the candidates running for office. We are glad to bring you these conversations all throughout election season, leading up to when early voting starts. And this hour, we're sitting down with the candidates for New York's 133rd Assembly District. The incumbent, Republican Marjorie Burns, is not running for re-election. She has endorsed the Livingston County Clerk, Andrea Bailey, for the job. Bailey is the Republican in this race. She's also served on her local town board. The Democrat is Colleen Walsh Williams, a union leader who has not held elective office as yet. The candidates are here to talk about their backgrounds, their platforms, their experience, their priorities for office, to introduce themselves to you and to answer any questions you may have for them. As always, we try to bring them together, and an increasing number of candidates don't want to sit down with their opponents. Not the issue today. We are glad to have both of them in studio. Welcome to Andrea Bailey, candidate for New York State Assembly in District Number 133. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Colleen Walsh Williams, also a candidate, the Democrat in the race, Andrea the Republican. Thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure.
What is wrong with both of you? Why are you doing this together?
I think it gives the listeners an opportunity to hear from both of us.
I think this is what democracy is about, having these conversations.
Thank you for both being here. It means a lot. We'll share their websites if you want to learn more. Andrea Bailey, the number 4 Assembly, AndreaBailey4Assembly.com, and Walsh-Williams.org, Walsh-Williams.org. I'm going to give Andrea Bailey a chance to introduce herself. We'll do that with Colleen Walsh Williams as well. Andrea, if you want to take a couple of minutes to tell listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from originally, and maybe why you decided that this is a position that you want right now.
Thank you very much. Yes, I was born and raised in Avon, and about 20 years ago, I moved to Geneseo with my husband, and we reside there with our three children. I was born from a humble family. My parents taught us service from a very young age. My mother served as the Avon town historian for 40 years. She is a retired librarian from the Rush Henrietta School District. My father was an Eagle Scout. He also served in the Marine Corps with the military police with them. And then he worked at Anna's Dairy, an iconic dairy located in Avon. I attended Catholic school through eighth grade at St. Agnes, and then I went on to the high school. Once I left high school, I went and got an associate's degree at GCC and then transferred into Buff State and received my bachelor's. From there, I entered into a 20-plus year of working in multi-unit management in and around retail specifically. In the last 17 years prior to going into the clerk's office in 2016, I was with PetSmart and held various positions with them. Within those positions, they encompassed operations, they encompassed customer service, and it also encompassed human resources. So I have a background in private sector. In 2016, I was approached by then County Clerk Mary Strickland, who asked if I'd be interested in coming into the office as her deputy. At that time, our youngest son was heading into junior high. I was on the road Monday through Friday. And if I wanted to see any of his events, then if I was in Albany at the time, I wouldn't be able to make it home. So for a quality of life change, I went into the clerk's office, and I have absolutely enjoyed every aspect of my time in the clerk's office. And when Mary retired in December of 2020, I did seek the seat, and I won in the election of 21. So I am currently in my first term as county clerk, and I believe that I have the best job. So people ask me, so Andrea, why do you want to run for assembly? And I was approached by Marjorie Burns. And I originally, in all transparency, had indicated I'm not sure if that's what I want to do. But as I continue to sit back at the seat that I have right now and see legislation that comes down that's lacking in definition of how it's going to be executed or in the language in which is coming down to how do we really do that where the rubber meets the road? And I'm dealing with that every day with constituents walking in and asking, Andrea, what does that mean? So in July, I had a conversation last July with Marge, and I brought up a lot of these concerns with her, at which time she said, Andrea, It's up to you. You need to make the decision, but that's exactly why you need to run. You understand the district. You understand the concerns that the residents have. You're dealing with it every day. But also you have the practical sense and the common sense to bring into committees. You know, obviously being in the minority, it is a challenge. But asking those questions in committee about the execution, about ensuring that all stakeholders are brought to the table when we're making legislation. Unfortunately, with the supermajority, that is not always the case. And over the last couple of years, the County Clerks Association has had to advocate to ensure that we were represented in some major legislation that has come down to ensure that the way in which they are looking for it to be implemented is going to be implemented. So after a conversation with my husband and our children, I decided that this is something that I want to do, and I want to continue to be a strong voice for our district as Marge has been over the last 5.5 years.
All right, Colleen, the floor is yours.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm from a very small town in northern Cayuga County, Cato, New York. From Cato, I went to SUNY New Paltz, where I earned my bachelor's degree in journalism. After that, I earned my master's degree in education and teaching certification for 7 through 12 English. I took a job at the urging of my father as a correction officer in Red Creek, New York, at Butler Correctional Facility. He spoke to me about pensions. I was 25 years old, and I was trying to understand, but he urged me until I applied for the job. So I did. I got a 95. I saw the starting salary for a New York State correction officer was twice what I was making, and I was working as a social worker at the time. So I said, sure, I'll try it. From then on, let's see, I worked as a New York State correction officer for 10 years. Proud to say that I was elected as a union representative for the correction officers and reelected until I left that job. I went back to school while I was a correction officer to get that teaching certification and ended up teaching in the prison system. So I taught in New York State prisons for 10 years after the correction officer stint. At that point, my facility was closed. They're closing correctional facilities all over the state. As you know, it was devastating for most of us who lived there because there weren't a lot of jobs in the area. But New York State has a process in which they find jobs for their employees if they're dislocated for some reason. So I ended up with a job at the New York State Department of Transportation in Rochester. And I found a lovely house in the town of Avon. And that's what I do at the moment. All of those years working for New York State, I've been involved as a union representative. And toward the last, 2016 to 2020, I was the regional director for the employees, the Public Employees Federation in Rochester, and I organized the activities of the union for the Monroe County and the 6 adjacent counties. I'm very, very familiar with the issues that face New York State because of my involvement with every single agency as problems came up, issues arose. Dealing with issues as a union representative gives you a good insight into how the agencies are running and what people need. Just to chime in on the fact that the assembly is run by Democrats. They have a supermajority. So when we elect Republicans to go there, unless they're willing to get involved in conversations with Democrats, they generally vote no on things that are going to happen anyway. I want to be a voice in the room. I want to be the voice of everyone in the 133rd Assembly district in that room. And I want to bring good things. I want to improve education. I want to make healthcare affordable. And I'd love to see it not attached to employment, because people lose jobs all the time, and we can't lose health insurance. It's a recipe for disaster.
All right, so that's an introduction to the candidates. You just heard Colleen Walsh Williams, the Democrat, Andrea Bailey, the Republican, running for New York State Assembly in the 133rd district there. Couple of things that I just want to follow up on, and then I want to ask both of the candidates what priority one would be. If there is there's a lot of issues that will animate any campaign, but if there's one overarching theme or an issue that drives them more than others, we'll talk about that in a moment. Briefly, I want to follow up here. I don't want to speak for your opponent. I think your opponent would say that the reason that Republicans vote no is they don't maybe like the legislation that's coming down the pike, or they disagree with some of the approaches. But I also understand, I think what you're saying, if you can elaborate, is you think the district is going to struggle to be served as well by someone in the elected minority? Is that right?
Exactly. Like I say, it's hard for someone in minority to kind of break into the group that's running things unless they're willing to be very diplomatic and compromise. And even a Democrat in that position has to do the same things, but a Democrat is going to be in the majority, and whether it's fair or not doesn't really matter, but they'll have more access to participate in the decisions that are being made.
Okay, Andrea, what do you make of that?
So I guess I would pause to say, you know, we're talking about a democratic process. So a democratic process, when we're bringing it forward, we have to be open to listen to others that might not be of like mind. And I feel that that is the challenge that we are experiencing right now with the supermajority. On several hearings that I would watch online as they were being streamed on different legislation that was coming down that was going to impact the residents of Livingston County that I currently serve as their county clerk, the question that I paused and I asked, and I would pick up the phone and ask our representatives, everyone that is there is saying what they want to hear. I understand that there are hard conversations that we need to have, and unfortunately, we've lost that somewhere along the way. I live my life by the premise that we can agree to disagree. My idea doesn't have to be right. Your idea doesn't have to be wrong, or vice versa. Unfortunately, we have found ourselves in a situation where that is how politics has come and what it has become. I feel one of the greatest lessons that I learned was when I was running for town board, and there was an individual, my opponent, ideology-wise, we thought completely different. At the end of the day, we both in mind wanted to do what was right for the residents of the town of Geneseo. Him and I sat and spoke when we were at the college doing some tabling for probably about an hour, and just discussing agriculture and what the agriculture meant to him, what agriculture meant to me. Agriculture is the number one industry in the district. It is very near and dear to my heart. Our family has a 500-acre crop farm that my son would like nothing more than to continue to operate that. So at the end of that conversation, we both looked at each other and appreciated that we took the time to speak with one another, because as he indicated, he didn't think of certain things. And as I indicated, I can understand your perspective. Again, we can agree to disagree, but what happened to us being able to have civil conversation with individuals that may have a different opinion than we do?
Well, let's talk about the issues that are animating your individual campaigns. Colleen, let me start with you. I mean, is there a priority one if you're elected?
Priority one is inflation relief. We have to find a way to help people who are struggling just to buy groceries and pay the mortgage or the rent.
What can the state do?
That's a good question. There are many, many different ways to do this, but you can give tax breaks to people with small children. You can provide services to people. You can We can connect them with low interest mortgages. We can provide more housing so that the market kind of settles itself a little bit. I live with my two grown children and my grandson because they can't leave the house. They can't afford to. They're just starting out.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Is it too hard to build new housing in this state?
You know, I don't think it's too hard, but even building materials, the prices are through the roof. So I know that a lot of downtown revitalization, New York Forward program projects are involving taking existing buildings and turning them into housing so that that's not wasted space and we're making the most out of the the resources that we have.
Okay, so you want to go and day one start working on helping with the costs that people are dealing with, perhaps new or increased child tax credits at the state level, expanded services, housing assistance.
Those are a few of the things we can do.
Okay. Andrea Bailey, what is priority one for you?
So I would look at what does our economic growth look like? So as Ms. Walsh-Williams mentioned, everything that was just indicated, we have been in the supermajority with the Democrats running this state since 2019. So for 5 years, there has been opportunity to fix these issues. They haven't been fixed. It's actually getting worse in our state. So I would be looking at our industries. As I indicated, agriculture is our number one industry. But we also need to look at other industries. And what does that economic growth do to the 133rd? We cannot continue to tax individuals, tax businesses. We are taxing them currently out of the state. We saw a decrease in the most recent census. That is telling. And if we were to ask many of those individuals, I have several friends that have left the state. A lot of it has to do with the taxes that we're paying. There are different things that we could do that would not necessarily add an additional tax. But when we're looking at industries, what can we do from internships of our youth right now? We are losing more and more skilled trades. We need individuals in the skilled trades. And how do we get our youth into those job segments and then get them tied in with employment? So how can we work with existing businesses to do internships that will then allow those students potentially to gain college credit, so on and so forth, as they build their career? I believe that there are other ways that we can look at our economic development while being fiscally responsible.
Ag is the number one industry in the 133rd district.
Correct.
What do you think Albany doesn't get right when it comes to ag policy?
Unfortunately, there are individuals that sit in the chambers that have never seen a cow. So my mom was raised on a horse farm. And as I indicated, we have a 500-acre crop farm that my father-in-law, my husband, and my son farm. I grew up riding horses with one of our biggest dairy farms locally. And what Albany doesn't understand is we continue to put regulations onto the industry, but yet we're not bringing them necessarily to the table to ask them the questions. Our farmers are some of the best stewards as it pertains to environmental. And it's unfortunate that individuals who don't understand what they are doing out there to protect the environment, it is in our farmers' best interest to ensure that the land is preserved. So unfortunately, there are too many individuals that are not willing to come up and meet the everyday farmer in the 133rd district.
What's an example maybe of a policy that's happening or one that does not exist that should, that would change things for farmers?
So one definitely it's one that over time it will, but was the overtime piece for farmers. I completely understand we want to ensure the quality of life for our farm hands. But I don't think any farm out there has people beating down their doors to come work on their property. You can't tell a cow that they're not going to be milked at 3 o'clock in the morning when that is the cycle in which they need to be milked on. We need individuals to be there to do that. Unfortunately, there is no clock that is badged in or out for my husband or my father-in-law when they're trying to beat a rainstorm, when they're trying to harvest their crops. So I think we need to have an understanding of that and what conversations can we have rather than a one-size-fits-all.
So tell me if I'm wrong here, and then I'll ask Colleen about this. I think what you're saying is some of the state's overtime rules are restrictive enough that it doesn't allow farms the necessary, especially small farms, the necessary flexibility to get the job done, to adapt to conditions, and still be able to afford to pay their workers. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you see it that way, Colleen?
I agree that we need to listen to farmers. My father was a Christmas tree farmer, and his father was a fruit farmer, so I have done my share of farming as well. But when someone works more than 50 or 40 hours a week, they deserve overtime, period. And if your business can't afford to pay the person what's legally what they've earned with their work, then you need to look at your business. There are other ways we can help farmers. There are things we can give farmers to help them become lucrative. But I think that the problem lies elsewhere, right? So all of us are paying our taxes. I'm pretty sure me and Andrea and you were paying our taxes. People with billions of dollars are not paying any income tax. And if they did, then we could afford to do better things. We could help those farmers. There are, we could give more money to our schools. One way to do it maybe is stock transfer tax they've been talking about. Wall Street, part of New York State, tons of money going through there every single day. And if we had a small fee for every transaction, then those people who have those stocks will pay a little bit, but it'll help New York throughout.
So it sounds like, again, I'll sum up here, correct me if I'm wrong, don't change these overtime rules because that would hurt the workers who deserve overtime in your view here.
Right.
But for the farms that feel like that could squeeze them to the point of closure, you think there are other mechanisms the state could use to help them, including targeting some of the wealthiest, Wall Street, et cetera?
Sure. I mean, we're talking about people who are struggling to make ends meet, right? We're talking about people who are trying to buy their food at the grocery store and pay their bills. Well, these people trading stocks, those things are not concerns for them. They're going to be okay.
Do you think that they will leave the state with these kinds of ultra-wealth taxes? Governor Hochul, a Democrat, has been hesitant to get on board with this kind of tax regime. Sometimes for that reason, although the governor has yet to come on this program and talk to me about it. But do you worry that people would leave the state?
I don't. New York City, Wall Street, I don't think those things are going to change. And honestly, there is so much money being made right now for the billionaire class. To me, it represents unpaid taxes, right? If a man owns a space program, I see a space program that should belong to the United States. Had he paid his taxes, it would belong to all of us.
Okay. Andrea, what do you think?
I think this is fundamentally a topic that my Colleen and I differ on.
Okay.
I feel that individuals work hard to be successful. You know, I don't believe that anybody in New York State owns a state space business. Maybe I'm wrong. So when I'm looking at it, I would agree, Evan, that if we were to increase or, you know, look to a specific group of individuals and call them out, we will see them exit the state. And when we look at some of the individuals just here right in the Rochester region who are very successful and who are millionaires, they give back to their community tenfold. And I think we would be hard-pressed not to acknowledge that.
All right. Let me ask about a couple of issues that the candidates have brought up in, from my read, some of Gary Craig's coverage in the Democrat and Chronicle as an example here. So Andrea Bailey, the Republican in the race for Assembly District number 133, you have said that the lack of reliable high-speed internet and broadband availability across the district is also a pretty big priority for you. Tell me about the state of that and what you think needs to change perhaps in Albany for that.
Absolutely. I do. As I've gone across the 133rd district, and I'm sure everybody knows that the lines got redrawn. So on this ballot in November, and then come January, we lose Wheatland in the county of Monroe. We gain two towns in Wyoming County, as well as two towns in Steuben County. So as I've gone across, one big issue is the reliability or broadband or high-speed internet at all across the district. Livingston County, I am proud to say, has been on the forefront of this. They've used various grants to bring in broadband, and they just went through another cycle and did that. I think we have a lot to learn from what Livingston County has done, but it has to be a commitment from everyone involved to be able to make it happen. So what could Albany do? I think some of the tools out there, or the resources, i.e. grants that have been out there, get more and more complicated every year as it passes, and which has nullified some municipalities, some counties, to be able to submit applications into that. So how can we assist them, or how can we see as a state that this is critical? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's going to help economic impact. It's going to help every individual, whether it be a student who's trying to take courses remotely or even in the classroom. There's more and more resources, or more and more mandatory steps that we have to do online. You know, the state is going, you know, taxes. If you file sales tax, you have to do that online. You have to have an account in the portal. You have to do that online. This past year, the Department of State, if you are a notary, you have to renew your notary now on a portal that the Department of State maintains. You can no longer go to your local county clerk's office and renew your notary. I was down in Steuben County, and I had a constituent who has been a notary for 50 years indicate she does not have access to high-speed internet. It took me 3 months to help her get her notary renewed. So we have to stop putting the cart before the horse, and we really need to look at what are the tools that need to be out there before we implement these mandatory measures.
Okay, a couple of things here, and I'll let Kelly weigh in on this. Some of what you're describing is trying to clear up some red tape and regulatory process and make it clearer and more smooth, I think.
Absolutely.
Some of it, though, sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, that you would go to Albany willing to see the state invest, spend money on this issue for more rural counties, more rural areas, districts, et cetera, to get broadband access. Is this something the state should invest more money in?
I think it's something that the state should invest more resources. At the end of the day, if that ultimately turns out to be money, then we can have those conversations. But I don't necessarily think that the resources are all out on the table. And to your point, the red tape that you have to go through to try and utilize some of the resources out there.
So this is an issue that, you know, I've been hosting this show for about 10 years, and 10 years ago, this issue was there. It's here now. The one change that I've observed over time is that, I don't know how fully bipartisan this is. We'll get Colleen's take in just a second. But I'm hearing more Republican town supervisors, Republican officials in more rural counties talk about the importance of public-private partnership or government resources for this. 10 years ago, I was talking to Republican leaders who would say, this has to be a free market issue, and these are private companies, and if companies don't feel it, that it is profitable to operate in certain places, they're not going to go there, and you can't force them to do it. Now that seems to be changing. Has that changed in your mind? Is this a free market issue, and if they can't make it profitable, they shouldn't be there? Or do you think it's becoming a public utility kind of thing?
I believe, based on the way in which we're moving, that more and more is going to online, that it is becoming a public utility concern. And I think it's based on the evolution of what's happening through various mechanisms.
Okay. Colleen, what do you think about this issue?
I agree completely. I mean, it's becoming almost a necessity to have internet access in your home, certainly in your business. I think it would help a lot of small businesses. I convinced my mother, who owns a small gift shop, to buy a computer years and years ago, and I had to goad her into using it, and now she's a whiz 20 years later, and it's a huge help. And she lives in the middle of a very rural county, too. So she's lucky to have high-speed internet access. And like I said, it's becoming a necessity. More work is remote. You can get a job where you can work in your own house. That's huge for rural areas, because a lot of us have to drive half an hour and a half to go to work. But if we could work from home, it would solve all kinds of problems.
You view it as a public utility at this point?
Yes. I agree in the public-private partnership, mm-hmm. because it's just the way it is. The public needs it. The private companies are benefiting from it. And so let's make an agreement, okay? So maybe it costs you a little more and you won't get the return that you do elsewhere, but the whole community now has access, and over time, it will be a profitable endeavor for them.
Should the state spend money to do this?
I would have to look closely at it, but I think it's a worthy project.
Talking to Colleen Walsh-Williams and Andrea Bailey. Andrea Bailey is the Republican in the race for New York State Assembly District number 133. Her website, Andrea Bailey, the number 4 Assembly, AndreaBailey4Assembly.com. Colleen Walsh-Williams is the Democrat in the race. Her website, walsh-williams.org. When you talked to the Democrat and Chronicle, Colleen, you brought up an issue with Gary Craig about an issue that's important to you, is that if you're elected, you want to be a vote to protect reproductive health care rights, and defending, in your word, every woman's right to choose. Do you feel like that can continue to be a prevalent issue at the state level? I mean, Governor Hochul has said, with the abortion landscape changing post-Dobbs, this is a state that she wants to be a safe haven for reproductive health care rights, for abortion access. Do you think that it could be in jeopardy at any point in the future, given the legislative majority that Democrats have?
Listen, I never thought there'd be a 6-week abortion ban in the state of Florida. And that's it was a shock to me. I'm sure it was a shock to a lot of other people. And there are 20 states now, roughly, where there is a 6-week ban. And how this plays out in people's lives is just now beginning to be shared with the world. It's not as simple as pro-life, pro-choice. I mean, there are so many specific individual scenarios that we didn't anticipate. Well, obviously, some people didn't anticipate. And we really can't be making those decisions for women. They should make those decisions with their doctor, period. None of our business.
But in this state, I mean, I remember talking to Rob Astorino, who was running for governor a couple terms ago, the better part of a decade ago. And he said, we should not be talking about this in New York State. This is a settled issue. Mm. What do you think?
I think there are 20 plus states out there that would have said the same thing a little while ago. And I'm not going to take anything for granted. I know how hard it is to make that decision. I've had people in my life go through it, and it's horrible. However, it's their personal business. It's a threat to everyone. This doing away with Roe Now it's, we have to fight. We have to make sure that we preserve our rights in New York State, and I will do that.
Andrea Bailey, where are you on this issue?
So I think what we need to look at is obviously with the Supreme Court ruling that put it back to the states. So I would question, are we surprised that, you know, 20 states changed it when you look at the leadership that's in those 20 states? So I would agree with Mr. Astorino when he said it really is not something that we necessarily should be talking about in New York. I believe that there are additional concerns. And, you know, the proposition that's going to be coming up on the ballot, you know, everybody is indicating that it's to codify abortion. However, the word abortion is not even in the wording of that bill. So I would question, you know, what the thought process was. I was not part of those discussions, obviously, when that bill was brought forth. That was, you know, determined when we went into extraordinary session back in July of 2022. I don't believe, you know, when you read the proposition, absolutely, we should not be discriminating against anyone. But I struggle with the premise that they're indicating that it's about abortion when abortion's not used in that word. So to the Democrats, you know, is that really something that I guess I struggle with having the conversation in New York
at this point? We'll talk about the proposition on a separate show coming up here. And it is important to make sure people understand what the wording is, what the implications are, what it means. If you are elected, set aside the prop. In a world where that prop doesn't exist, let's just say that there is a change in the legislature, that not only you win, but a number of seats flip. You get something closer to parity or a legislative majority. Would you vote for any abortion restrictions?
I am pro-life with exceptions. And exceptions being, obviously, you know, rape, incest, and then the mother's well-being.
Okay, so those would be the only exceptions to allow abortion to happen.
As I sit here in front of you today, yes.
Okay, you think realistically that's not something you'd be voting on if you win, but who knows if majorities change, that's where you'd be on it.
I would agree with that.
Okay, I think that that covers that issue. Let me also turn to another issue that comes up quite a bit in, well, really in every district, but if you travel through the Southern Tier, if you travel through rural New York State, you still see signs about the SAFE Act and gun rights. You're a county clerk. You hear about this all the time. Colleen, you're nodding over there. Colleen, I'll start with you. You know, the SAFE Act is years ago now, but if you're elected to the New York State Assembly, do you intend to pursue any change to legislation when it comes to gun laws, either vis-a-vis the SAFE Act or different laws, et cetera?
I certainly don't want to sit here and wait for a school shooting to happen in our district. To me, that's the worst thing we could do. Something needs to happen to address gun violence in New York State. I can tell you that I was brought up with in a hunting family. My father brought me duck hunting and we went deer hunting and I fire weapons and he had them in the house. It doesn't bother me. I understand people that enjoy those things and they have the right to do that. What we need to do is drill down to how do we stop people who intend to do grave harm to other people without taking away anyone's guns, right?
Well,
I think background checks are important. I mean, if you just look at this last situation in northern Georgia, there were all kinds of bells going off with this kid. And I think his mother even called the school that day and said, you know, I'm afraid something might happen. If we know that, then why can't we do something? You know, I don't think it's infringing on anyone's Second Amendment right if we take a troubled kid who has mentioned the fact that he's going to go shoot up the school and, you know, go to his parents and just tell them, you know, we have to keep the guns away from this kid.
Most people who commit that kind of violence, though, I mean, certainly there are occasional signs, internet postings, etc. But not everyone who's going to commit an act of violence like that is outright telling somebody. And you can't just incarcerate people when they have various mental health concerns, I don't think, right?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm not talking about incarcerating people with mental health issues, but just making sure they don't have access to guns and ammunition.
All right. So let me hit 2 points there, and then we'll ask Andrea about this. So you bring up school shootings. The vast majority of gun violence in this country, gun violence in general, is with handguns. It's not with AR-15s and the like. The vast majority of mass shootings in schools is with the AR-15s of the world. Not all, but a majority. When you look at school shootings, and this is, I don't like doing this statistically because this feels so clinical and sterile, and we should, I mean, it is a tragedy every time it happens. So I apologize for making this sound like a statistical debate. This is a real human issue. But when you just look at the numbers, school shootings account for a very small number of total gun deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But given the nature of the psychic harm they can do to communities, obviously it's important to talk about them. Are you saying that it's that class of weapon that should be banned, confiscated, taken out of this country? Is it something else to secure schools? What is it that you see that is not happening that would make schools safer?
Well, I get your point that it's a small number comparatively. School shootings
are still
more
than most countries or all countries in the world. I'm not trying to minimize it.
But every parent in the United States wants to know they can send their kids to school.
Absolutely.
And they'll come home safe at the end of the day. So these assault-style weapons, you know, I know people that have things like that, and I don't know why, maybe target shooting or something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, the United States has a hell of a lot more guns than most other countries, and that is a direct correlation to the number of people that are being shot.
I'm just trying to see if you're elected, are you going to support a ban on certain classes of guns?
I would have to talk to my constituents about that.
Okay.
I mean, I would be a representative of the people of the district, and I would have those conversations. So working with the union for all those years, it's like a family. I always looked at it like a family. You know, you love your family, and some of them irritate you. Some of them disagree with you. Sometimes you got to wrestle with some of them. But you're all in the family. At the end of the day, we got to solve the problem together. So, you know, I'm willing to talk to people, and, you know, I don't want to take away anyone's rights. However, I don't want people being shot in the street. It's not civilized.
Okay.
And we're better
and you
than
do
that.
Support background checks or mechanisms to make the process of buying and acquiring firearms a little more lengthy, involved, well regulated?
I don't see a problem with it. I mean, if you want to go register a car, you have to do some things, right? You can't just go out and start driving around on the road in an unsafe vehicle without a license or insurance or inspection. So if we're willing to do all that for cars, why can't we do a little something for guns?
Let me start with that point with Andrea Bailey, and then we'll get back to the classes of weapons. But in general, and again, Andrea is the Republican in the race, Colleen is the Democrat, Andrea is the county clerk in Livingston County. In general, do you support either the kinds of background checks that your opponent in the race is talking about and a process that would make it a little bit more like buying a car, a little more of a lengthy process before you can purchase and acquire a firearm?
So, Evan, thank you. I'm just going to back up. These mechanisms are already in place. I deal with it every day in and day out with constituents. I can say I have been talking to our constituents of the 133rd. I have been all over the district talking to constituents. I've been at many sportsmen's clubs, meetings, or events, speaking to our law-abiding gun holders. And I think where we have missed the point is when you look at statistics, you know, nearly out 9 out of 10 crimes with handguns come from out of state. And that was from the Attorney General, had indicated that. So the supermajority went in 2019, and we have seen violence and crime in general, gun violence and crime in general, increase dramatically in New York. Those are statistics that are coming from the Division of Criminal Justice Services. We went into extraordinary session in 2022 based on the Supreme Court turning over or indicating, basically at the end of the day, when you were filling out a pistol permit application, you had to give a cause, a proper cause as to why you wanted a carry conceal permit. They indicated that that was unconstitutional to have to indicate a cause. We went back into extraordinary session in July, and we came out with what is the CCIA, or the Carry Conceal Improvement Act. The rules and regulations that came through that are only infringing or only making hoops for our law-abiding citizens, our law-abiding pistol permit holders, to have to jump through on a day-in and day-out basis. When I had individuals come into the office and say, Andrea, I don't know what this means. I don't understand this. You know, the mechanisms are already out there in place. But what we are not doing is we are not discussing the root cause. When we take a look at it, the individuals that are creating or the individuals that are out there using guns, we see it right here every day, unfortunately, in the city of Rochester. They are not law-abiding citizens. They did not go to a retail establishment and purchase that pistol. They are coming from other resources. And we need to address the root cause. And it's not just adding law upon law onto those law-abiding citizens who are not breaking the law. And that is my concern. So as you travel across the rural 133rd, you do see those signs that say repeal the SAFE Act. You have many individuals with concerns about CCIA. And at the end of the day, they want to ensure proper handling of weapons as well. If you go to any sportsman's club, they're teaching you how to properly handle your weapon. We've taught that to our children. You know, my husband has gone out hunting with my son. My son continues to hunt. My brother-in-law is an avid hunter. That is what we speak. The laws that continue to be put on the book are only making it that much harder. You know, if you're crossing your land into someone else's, you know, back when CCIA first came out, do they have a sign up that you can walk if you're tracking a deer? You know, so all of those things that we have just complicated our day-to-day life in rural upstate New York with our law-abiding citizens, we need to take a look at that and address the root cause. They're not the individuals who are out on the streets with drive-by shootings.
Would you support concealed carry?
Absolutely. New York State is a concealed carry state.
And you'll continue to support that?
Absolutely.
Colleen, do you support concealed carry?
I have no problem with concealed carry.
Okay. AR-15s and the like, would you support any kind of a ban or restriction?
So when you talk AR-15s, there's already an assault. You can't have one in New York State. So the SAFE Act, you can't purchase an assault weapon in New York State.
But
I guess
grandfathering them in, I mean, they exist. People have them.
Correct.
Would you support any further restrictions on people who have them still?
No.
You think they should be able to have them?
Yes.
Okay. We got 90 seconds left. Can you take 45 seconds apiece and just leave whatever you want with listeners? And Andrea, can you do that? Don't make me keep you to the time. 45
okay.
Seconds. Go ahead.
I would just ask, you know, your listeners and supporters and, you know, voters in the 133rd for your support as I head into the election November 5th. Early voting starts October 26th. I am available. My information is on my website, which is Andrea Bailey, the number 4assembly.com. And I ask all of you, if you have questions or concerns, don't hesitate to contact me.
Colleen Walsh Williams. She did it in 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Does that mean I have a minute?
Go ahead.
Just kidding. Having worked with the unions for almost 30 years. I've learned how to work with people to make positive change. I've learned to compromise. I've learned to collaborate. Like I said, I look at my job in representation as if I'm representing my family, right? Everyone's welcome. I don't care what your party affiliation is. I don't even care if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. You can come in and talk to me, and I'll listen to your your concerns. This seat belongs to every single person who lives in the 133rd district. I will hear from them because I will go and see them. I am knocking on doors and talking to people every day too. So
you got to draw the line at Patriots fans, I think.
Oh, that's another show, Dawson.
Walsh-Williams.org is website.
Yes,
Walsh-Williams.org. I am grateful that the candidates on the ballot in this race were here together this hour. And I hope that whoever wins, you come back a bunch of times here and keep talking to us and the listeners of this district and this region.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Andrea Bailey, the Republican. Colleen Walsh-Williams, the Democrat. They're running for New York State Assembly, District Number 133. We've got more connections coming up in a moment.